You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
Thanks, Danielle. Good morning and welcome to the show. It's just gone 7 past 7 and it's great to be with you. And we do it every Saturday morning, of course, for Calypso Bay, where you can live your dream lifestyle in Southeast Queensland's premier waterfront development. Visit calypsobay.com.au. And also, Water's Edge Apartments make the move to Water's Edge on the Redcliffe Peninsula. It's absolute waterfront luxury from $875,000. It's great buying. 8 past 7, 4BC, and we are talking real estate. And our main topic part of the show this morning will be we're privileged to have in the studio the Minister for Housing and Public Works, also a member for Springwood, the Honourable Mick DeBrenny. Minister, thank you for giving us your time this morning.
Good morning, Kevin, and thanks to listeners for having me on again.
I see you've had your early morning cup of coffee, so you're all fired up, ready to go.
Well, I'm halfway through it.
You're halfway through it. You're one step ahead of me. A couple of major topics this morning I want to talk to you about. Obviously, we'll have a chat about the QBCC, but just before we do, last weekend, a conversation with the head of the Strata Community Australia, Simon Barnard, who I understand you've met with on several occasions, to do with the home warranty scheme and concern, just to remind everyone about the story from last weekend. Thousands of Queensland apartment and duplex owners may see their insurance premium skyrocket for simple repairs following changes by the state government. So, Minister, where are we at with that now?
Well, can I start by saying I'm really unhappy with the pricing situation, the notional pricing situation that's been established. And quite frankly, to the listeners out there, I think that the situation that exists is really quite unfair. What we've got here is yet another example of where the Queensland Building and Construction Commission has failed to properly brief me. And more importantly, I think they failed to be clear with the public on this very important issue.
Fine. Okay. Well, so what you're saying is the QBCC were well aware that this was going to be happening and just didn't brief your department on it?
Well, when I sat down with Simon and the team at Strata Communities Australia, who I've got to say are incredibly professional, very, very good advocates for the people that they represent and for the sector, sat down with them a couple of times when they raised this issue with me. And what became clear to me that the expectations of the community, the expectations that I've shared with listeners here on your show, is that we want to see more people living in a different mix of houses. We expect to see greater number of units, so more strata unit owners throughout Queensland. And then for the QBCC to establish a home warranty product that actually unfairly charges those unit owners more than people live in detached houses is way out of step with community expectations, way out of step with my expectations, and that's why I've given a commitment to Strata Communities Australia to move very, very quickly to rectify that.
So how soon will that be rectified? Well, actually, we probably should just go over what the ramifications are of what we're talking about here. I mean, it's a major disparity between the amount paid by strata owners and paid by normal household owners.
So the national pricing arrangements that were established by the QBCC for small refurbishments, unit holders will actually achieve a bit of a saving. But for more significant refurbishments, so if you're thinking about perhaps a 50 or 100 unit complex that needs to be repainted or common areas need to be retiled throughout, if you're paying those contracts over $20,000, the national pricing will mean that the body corporate will be charged an insurance premium, but then every single unit holder will be charged an additional individual insurance premium amount as well. So it's really a bit of a double dipping scenario, and I just don't think that's fair.
Can the legislation be changed?
Yeah, so what I'm committed to is making sure there are fair arrangements so that the same sorts of expectations that someone who lives in a detached house or a unit, they should be the same. And as I've said, Queensland expects to see pretty significant increases in the numbers of unit holders as we see densities grow in our major cities and towns. And ensuring that people have a fair deal is absolutely paramount to this government, paramount to me. I expect that before this time next weekend that we'll be able to give real clarity, real detail, and we'll restore fairness for everybody who's involved in strata units across the state.
Will you be able to deliver what the strata community have actually asked for, Minister?
What Simon's been talking and his team at Strata Communities Australia have been talking about is a fair deal and a fair go. My proposals, what we're working through, are exactly in step with that.
Well, they've been asking you to make sure that the premiums are the same. Is that effectively going to be what will happen?
Well, we're working through the detail of what we can achieve, but what I can commit to Strata Communities Australia and all of the listeners out there who may have been affected by this decision of the QBCC, that the insurance arrangements will be fair.
Okay, but you can't quantify that any further than that.
Well, I look forward to being able to give the detail of that. I expect that when we announce the details of that, that whether you're in a detached home or a strata unit, if you have the same sorts of cover, then you'll have the same sort of premium.
Ah, fair enough. Okay. Well, that's probably as far as you can take it now, and I appreciate that fact. And even the QBCC obviously thought what they were doing was fair, and I guess the word fair can be taken in lots of different ways. But we'll wait and see what comes forth, Minister. Thank you. Could we swing to the QBCC? And I guess this sort of highlights a lot of the frustrations many people have with the QBCC and have had for some time. Is this likely to be a tipping point for you in terms of how you'll deal with the QBCC, or in fact, the people who are inside the QBCC?
Well, Kevin, I think you're right. What this latest incident proves to me is that, in fact, the Queensland Building and Construction Commission is, quite frankly, broken. Back in 2012, there was a fairly intensive parliamentary committee inquiry into the old Queensland Building Services Authority. And I brought along a note with me today about what that inquiry found. I just want to quote from that, if it's okay. It said, and I quote, the committee has noted reports that both consumers and licensees regularly receive incorrect and inconsistent advice and are often treated with disrespect.
Yeah.
The committee is particularly concerned by the consistent reports of harassment, intimidation and bullying.
When was that?
This was in 2012, Kevin, and then the committee report goes on to talk about the need to establish a new building regulatory authority that restores fairness, gives correct advice, gives consistent advice, and does treat people with respect. But we're now 4 years on, Kevin, and I don't think anything's changed. I don't think your listeners think much has changed either. So what did happen as a result of that report was that the previous government gave unfettered and unchecked power to the board of the QBCC, not the government, the board of the QBCC, and it became a power unto itself. And so policies like the strata title home warranty insurance are a reflection of a board that has unchecked power, I think is consistently acting out of step with community expectations, and as I've said on this show before, is acting out of step with my expectations.
So how do you fix that? I mean, if head's got a role?
Well, every day I get complaints from licensed tradesmen and women, from small business owners, from homeowners, from peak bodies representing industry. The board is up for renewal soon. I'm focused on making sure that there is a board established that does act consistent with community expectations and does act consistent with my expectations. So that'll be happening very, very soon.
Minister, the board is one thing. It's the people inside the QBCC. I mean, you can change the board, but can you change the culture?
Well, I've already started work with the new commissioner, Brett Bassett, who's been on this program me before. What he needs is a board that'll support him through the delivery of that cultural change. It's a big task to turn that around, but a very, very important one. He and I are in lockstep in terms of our agenda to restore communities' confidence in the Queensland Building Regulatory Authority, and I'll be wasting no time making sure that those steps are in place.
Minister, we'll take a quick break. I want to come back. We haven't quite finished talking about this yet, but my guest is the Minister for Housing, and also Public Works, and also member for Springwood, the Honourable Mick Tobrenny. We'll be back after a break.
Real estate on 4BC. Make the move to Water's Edge Apartments on the Redcliffe Peninsula. It's absolute waterfront luxury from just $875,000.
20 past seven, and my guest in studio is the Honourable Mick Tobrenny, Minister for Housing and Public Works. And, Minister, we're talking there just before the break about the QBCC. I've often wondered about the QBCC, who it's there to serve.
Well, we heard the Commissioner say just the other day on this show that it's there to serve all Queenslanders. I am instructing it to make sure that it does serve all Queenslanders. So whether you're a homeowner, you're a licensee, it should be serving everybody. I think what the perception, and it's a correct perception, I think, is that it isn't serving all Queenslanders to the expectations that I have set or the expectations that the community has. And it's that inconsistency in the application of its policies, which in many cases are, I think, unfair. It's that delivery of inconsistent advice. And it's the way in which, the reports come to me of people, whether they're a homeowner or they're a licensee, simply being treated with disrespect that is just absolutely unacceptable. And I'm being very, very clear that I want a board and want leadership of the QBCC that won't tolerate officers that fail to give correct advice, that fail to give consistent advice, and that fail to treat all Queenslanders with the respect that they deserve.
Yeah, because many people, and we've had a number of callers, have got one on the line now. If you'd like a call too, the Minister has agreed to take callers 13 13 32. But, Minister, continually we're hearing people talk about bullying tactics, inconsistencies with decisions, delaying tactics. I've asked the question before, but I've never actually had the answer, and that is, are you aware of how many complaints currently there are before the QBCC or that they're currently dealing with, and has that number increased?
Well, I think the 2015-16 annual report of the QBCC is quite damning in terms of its service delivery standards, and that's certainly influencing my way forward on this. It's also part of why I'll be going out to the community to discuss Queenslanders' expectations. So from early next year, I'll be launching one of the most significant community consultations around the future of the building industry. We'll be looking at licensing, the home warranty scheme. We'll be looking at security of payments for subbies, certifiers. We'll be looking at housing code. That'll be an opportunity for me to meet face-to-face with Queenslanders right across this state. The figures tell me one thing, that the organisation needs an overhaul, and it's fundamentally broken. But what will really draw out the direction for change for me will be those face-to-face conversations I'm very much looking forward to having.
Well, let's have a conversation with someone now. David's got a point he'd like to make. David, welcome to the show, and thanks for your call.
Oh, thank you very much, Kevin and Minister. We had major problems here. We had a guy that came out and built a... Well, the contractor, the gentleman that owned the business, came out, gave us a quote, said he'd do a retaining wall, had people came out, no concrete around the posts, the retaining wall going up the side of the driveway was going the wrong way. We put it all in writing, sent it through the QBCC, inspector came out, looked at it and said, oh, it's going... we said, what about this going two different directions up the driveway? Oh, that's okay, that's fine, it's just appearances. Walked around the other side and we said, what about the retaining wall? Part of it's going in the ground, part of it's going out of the ground. He said, oh, that's fine, that's not a problem. Just kicked the dirt under it and walked off and said, we can't help you. If you have a problem, you need to go to small claims court.
So what's the situation with it now, David?
We're still going on. We're still waiting for capping to be done on the top of the retaining wall. We've actually had to get pieces of timber to cover up all their faults on the side. And the thing that really annoys me is you guys are actually, the minister and the department are giving these guys licenses. And I mean, the guy that was coming out and fixing it, he was telling us part of his time that's spent going out fixing up problems that people that are employed by this company actually fix retaining walls and fences. So, I mean,
yeah, David.
You're saying that there's a problem. Most definitely, there's a big problem.
Yeah, David. Look, I think what you're talking about is indicative of what I hear from homeowners pretty regularly. the sort of treatment that you're reporting there, to me, is just quite frankly unacceptable. I want to get your details of your specific case so that we can make sure that that's looked into. But I think, as I say, it's emblematic of the way that people are often treated. It's simply
Minister,
not good
enough. The guy that inspected it just couldn't have cared less. All he did was said, oh, we should have been telling the contractor how to build a retaining wall. And these guys are supposed to be specialists in retaining wall. I mean, every question we ask, he give us a non-answer, sorry, we can't help you.
Well, if you knew how to build a retaining wall, you'd probably do it yourself. You wouldn't get a contractor in to
do it.
That's
exactly
right. And that's the point. That's why we have a licensing system. That's why, I'm going to be making sure that the licensing system is as robust as possible. But I'm also going to be making sure that the people whose job it is to police it, to protect you as a consumer, and to protect the licensees who do the right thing, are up to standard. And I don't think it's quite there yet. So that's the step that I'm going to be taking for you.
David, thanks for your call. And if you can just hold on, David, we'll hand you back to Pete and we'll get your details and pass them on to the Minister. Thank you very much. Yeah, good on you, David. Yeah, Minister, I think just raising another point out of that, and that is if you go to the QBCC website, there's an excellent opportunity for you to check on the qualifications of any builder who's licensed through the QBCC. But my beef has always been that that's just not up to date. And I've seen complaints from people that have gone through to the QBCC and there's been no notation whatsoever, even though there's been a breach recorded against that particular builder. It's not shown on the website, and if it is, it's only up there for a short period of time, then it's taken down. I mean, that's not good support for the community, is it?
No, absolutely. And I think industry deserves better than that too. You know, in the vast majority of cases, we have pretty outstanding builders here in Queensland. We've got great subcontractors who do deliver good work. They deserve to be protected from the dodgy operators. And if we've got a system that is allowing dodgy operators to win contracts because the website is not up to date, again, that is simply unacceptable. That needs to change. And that's about organisational leadership. And if that's not up to scratch, then it's up to me to deliver a better outcome.
Yeah, I guess, in fairness, and I take you at your word, and I fully endorse what you're doing, and I'll support you 110%, but many people have heard these sorts of sentiments for a long time, and I guess the delivery of this is going to be fairly important. What's the time frame, Minister?
Well, there are two parts to this. There's a detailed review of all of the matters relating to how building occurs in Queensland, and I'll be doing that from early next year, so that, as I said, that'll be home warranty scheme, licensing, certifiers, security of payments, housing codes, sustainability of housing design, etc. But then there's also the second part of that, which is the organisational leadership. I'll be working to deal with that very, very quickly. The board is up for renewal at the end of this month. And as I've committed to listeners, is that the organisational leadership, the strategic leadership of the QBCC, needs to be one that meets my expectations and meets the community expectations, and I'll be delivering that from the start of the new board.
And the makeup of that new board, who'll be deciding on that?
Well, government will decide on that, and we'll make the appointments based on skills, experience and merit. And I'll be sitting down with that group as it's appointed to clearly outline my expectations around consistency, around fairness, and around upholding the standards that Queenslanders expect.
Minister, for those, there'll be a number of people listening now who have either got complaints in before the QBCC or are having frustrations now. What would you recommend they do, and what can they expect to see happen?
Well, I would recommend that anybody who's currently working with the QBC on the resolution of a dispute to continue to do that. I know that almost every day somebody in Queensland will write to me or contact my office and ask for assistance in the resolution of those matters. And in every single one of those cases, I work with the Commissioner of the Queensland Building Construction Commission to resolve where they feel has been an inaccuracy or an irregularity in terms of advice or process. I should point out, though, that there's a large team of over 200 staff at the QBCC who are striving to deliver. What I need to make sure, and what the leadership of the organisation needs to make sure, is that they've got the systems and processes to be able to do their job properly, and I don't think it's quite there yet. So the vast majority of those staff try and do the right thing, But I think the organisational structure and the organisational culture, as I think many people recognise, is quite broken and needs an overhaul.
Well, Minister, thank you very much for giving us your time this morning. Just one or two other very quick things before I let you go. But thank you for coming in and being so upfront about the QBCC. And I look forward to the opportunity to keep in touch with you about how that's progressing. And we'll support that in any way we can. If I could just quickly refer to a letter that's been sent out by the Brisbane City Council from the Lord Mayor's office, which I assume is to every ratepayer in Brisbane. Just quickly summarising this, the state government has set Brisbane City Council a target of approving more than 223,000 new homes over a 30-year period to keep up with the city's growing population. To meet this target, the rate at which these homes would have to be built was an increase of around 50%. Are those figures accurate?
Well, I haven't seen the figures, but as the Deputy Premier said earlier this week, what this appears to me to be is another tactic and a political stunt from the Brisbane City Council. I sat around the table in the development of the draft South East Queensland Regional Plan. These are figures that have been generated in consultation and partnership with mayors and their officials over many, 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 many meetings. And so I think now to publish a letter indicating that they disagree with those figures is quite frankly a political stunt. I think the residents of Brisbane City Council area deserve better from their council leadership. So we'll certainly have a look at what they've written to us. But I think, as I said. We'd expect better.
The implication here, Minister, is that they could be pushing for a lot more infill. In other words, changing a lot of the current structures within the city, and maybe defraying some of that blame, if you like, for that sort of infill across to you and the demands that the state government's making. Is that how you would read that?
Well, I think so. We live in a changing community. We live in changing cities right across Queensland and Australia and globally. And we are seeing an increase in infill. We are seeing a different style of living. We are seeing communities that are more connected. And we are seeing a real push to deliver affordable housing. And part of that is about using infill as a planning tool to make sure that people can live close to where they work and enjoy a great inner city lifestyle. That was the positive conversations that we had with local government authorities in the development of the South East Queensland draft plan. And so I think now to come out and say that they're unhappy about that is pretty wafer thin in terms of their commitment to real political change in terms of how we deliver good housing outcomes here in the southeast.
Minister, we've pushed our time frame with you. I do appreciate you staying with us. Thank you very much for your time. Look forward to having you back in the studio whenever you can come back and continue to work with you on the QBCC and other issues.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. My guest has been the Minister for Housing and Public Works, the Honourable Mick Tobrenny.
Weekend Real Estate with Kevin Turner. Thanks to Calypso Bay. Live your dream lifestyle in southeast Queensland. Premier waterfront development, calypsobay.com.au.
22 minutes to 8, 4BC, and we're talking real estate. And it's time for us to have a chat to Dr. Andrew Wilson, Chief Economist at the Domain Group. Good morning, Dr. Andrew.
Good morning, Mr. Kevin Turner.
you've been a busy boy. I'm reading up during the week about, I saw that report about investors roaring back into the housing markets as New South Wales Absolutely. Charges ahead. They're big words.
Big words for a big month for investors, Kevin. And we've been saying for a while now that we believe the future is more and more about more and more investors. And the data is certainly validating that point of view in Australia. Investor activity, that's lending, is recorded by the ABS, up 5.8% over September. And compared to September last year, investor lending nationally is up 9.5%. So investors are really, identifying, the strength of residential investment, particularly, when we have low interest rates and low incomes growth. And Queensland had a very big increase, 7.8% over the month. So still down a little bit on 2.5% below where it was a year ago. But there's no doubt there's momentum in that Queensland market in terms of increased investor activity. And that's a pretty good result considering some of our central and northern Queensland markets are pretty flat at the moment.
Yeah, gee, I had the Minister for Housing in the studio early, just before the news break, and I didn't get a chance to mention, but their first home buyers boost in Queensland seems to be hitting an accord with an increased number of first home buyers.
Yeah, that's right, Kevin. Another good month for first home buyers in Queensland, up by 2% over the month. 1,864 first home buyer loans were recorded by the ABS, and that's the highest number for the year. So, good news there for first home buyers and the economy as well. And I guess it validates also that first home buyer boost that's driving a lot of first home buyers into new house and land packages on the fringe. So, but the average loan, interestingly enough, Kevin, is up now to a record high, $308,700. So the average loan for first home buyer in Queensland over September was $308,700. So I guess that demand is pushing up prices, as I said, particularly for those new home and land packages to the north and the west of Brisbane.
Yeah, and just to balance that up, it's having the other effect of, with an increase in vacancy rates. So we're seeing a lot of people who probably would have been tenants moving out and buying their own properties. Am I reading that right, Andrew?
Absolutely, and that's we've recorded a sharp increase in vacancy rates in Brisbane for both houses and units. Of course, the unit equation is being impacted by plenty of new stock coming onto the market. But I think you're absolutely right, Kevin, with the higher vacancy rates for houses is because those tenants or prospective tenants are finding houses to live in as owner-occupiers. And I guess that swings and roundabouts, isn't it, in that sense? But plenty of investors still interested in the market in Queensland. And why wouldn't they be in that Brisbane market, particularly given that we'll still record some solid prices growth, I believe, this year in Brisbane for houses. And, the yields are certainly higher than down in Sydney and Melbourne. So returns are still pretty good for houses. Well, I think we've got a little bit of softness happening with rents with those higher vacancy rates. But, look, investors are certainly interested in that Brisbane market at the moment, particularly for houses.
Yeah. Unemployment has improved, I believe, in Queensland, but wages growth is a bit slow. What impact is that going to have on looking nationally now at interest rates, do you think, next year?
Well, since we had our decision a couple of weeks ago, that Melbourne Cup decision from the Reserve Bank, they decided to leave rates on hold again. The data's actually gone the other way a little bit, and I think the Reserve Bank, a little surprised by the wages growth number that came out last week, which was just 1.2% seasonally adjusted, which was an all-time low in terms of the annual wages growth nationally. And, Queensland is just 1.9%, another record low year for wages growth. And, with these low numbers and low inflation, it really shows the economy is in need of some stimulation. And the Reserve Bank was relying on what it believed would be consumer spending next year to get the economy up and running. But with low wages growth, that becomes really problematic. And even though the unemployment rate improved in Queensland, nice fall from 6.2% to 5.8%. Again, if we look at the data, underlying numbers in the data, we can see actually we lost 43,000 full-time jobs this year compared to the end of last year, where 43,000 fewer full-time jobs in Queensland. So this is another conundrum for the Reserve Bank that, even though the unemployment rate's looking better, we're not really creating full-time work because there's just not the capacity in the economy to do that at the moment. And the other interesting point from the unemployment data was the participation rate, Kevin, which shows the proportion of those active in the workforce as a percentage of the population. And that was down to 63.4% in Queensland. And, that's the lowest number recorded over a month since 1993. So it just shows you that, that some of the numbers look good on the surface, but when you dig a little deeper, it's not so good. And I think this is really bringing an interest rate cut next year sooner rather than later back onto the card. And I think a lot will have to improve for that not to happen.
Yes, Andrew, next weekend, we'll give you a weekend off, of course, as we discussed off air. But the weekend after that, we're going to have the privilege of having you in the studio. What I'd love to do at some stage, whether we do it on the 3rd of December or not, but I'd like to really turn the spotlight onto the Gold Coast and Sunshine Coast.
Absolutely.
Because I'm hearing lots of great stories from both of those areas. And I thought we might spend a bit of time doing that, if you've got time to put it together by the 3rd of December. And also have a look around Queensland at what you think is going to happen in the Queensland market into 2017. So a little bit of homework for you, maybe.
No worries. We're going to be doing our State of the Market report to be released first week in December, Kevin. So we'll certainly have the Queensland wrap for you that day. And I've just come back from the Sunshine Coast, Noosa Heads and Mooloolaba Bar. We did two presentations. Those markets doing very nicely. So we've got plenty of data to discuss.
Well, good. I look forward to that. So we'll have you in the studio on the 3rd of December. Thanks for your time, mate.
Thanks very much, Kevin. Catch you then.
Yeah, Dr. Andrew Wilson, Chief Economist at the Domain Group. Coming up a little bit later in the show, too, after the break, I'm going to be having a look at the Block. We've had a lot of mail, the Block TV show. Of course, we've had a lot of mail about how some of the auctions were conducted. So we'll have a look at that. And I'll try and answer a couple of those questions. And there was also a really good question about depreciation. So I'll pick up on that too after the break. It's 7:45, 4BC. We're talking real estate. We do that for Calypso Bay, where you can live your dream lifestyle in southeast Queensland's premier waterfront development. Visit calypsobay.com.au and you can make the move to Water's Edge Apartments on the Redcliffe Peninsula. Absolute waterfront luxury from $875,000.
Weekend Real Estate with Kevin Turner. Thanks to Calypso Bay. Live your dream lifestyle in southeast Queensland's premier waterfront development. calypsobay.com.au.
Coming up to 10 and a half minutes to 8. More news at 8 o'clock. And I mentioned just before the break there that I'd be talking about the Block. And we've had a number of questions sent in during the week, and keep them coming in too. You can actually contact us through the website, realestatetalk.com.au. We get a lot of questions in there that we either answer on the online show or answer in this show, but there was quite a lot come in for the Block television show, which of course the final was last weekend. One of the questions came from Sean at Cleveland, who said, why do we always see buyer's agents on the Block and not actual buyers? That doesn't make sense to me, says Sean. Surely people can bid for themselves, or no? Cheers. Well, yeah, a lot of people don't realise that they were all buyer's agents. I think the auctioneers are now acknowledging that they are buyer's agents. Buyer's agents are becoming a much more popular option for people, particularly to bid at an auction, because these buyer's agents are doing it all the time. They're very skilled. They know what they're doing. The auctioneers know them. They know the auctioneers. They know the tactics. And there are a lot of tactics employed by both sides. And I'll talk about that in just a moment, because one of the calls, one of the questions was about the tactics used by the auctioneer on one of the properties, Kim and Chris's home. And I'll talk about that in just a moment. But there are tactics on both sides. And I think there's a lot of skill that has to go into buying a property at the right price. And I think a number of people who are buying properties around $2, $3, $4, or even $5 million don't necessarily want people to know who they are. So they actually employ an agent to bid on their behalf. So it's not all that unusual. And I think we're going to see more and more of it. And to be quite honest, I've spoken to a few of the buyer's agents. They just love to get on the Block anyway. I guess it's all about the ego for them. Anyway, another question in from Jamie at Goodner, who says, I heard that the Block apartments were so popular because they had such a good depreciation schedule, about $80,000 to $100,000 per year per apartment, apparently. Why does that make them a better investment than any other property? Well, to answer that question, the man we always turn to when it comes to tax depreciation, and that is Brad Beer from BMT Tax Depreciation. He joins me. Morning, Brad. Thanks for taking our call this morning too.
Hi, Kevin. Great to be here.
Yeah, 13 to 8. Brad, that question from Jamie, are you up to speed on the amount of depreciation that those Block properties would have achieved or could have achieved?
Yes, we did the depreciation schedules and estimates, and we did a challenge on the construction cost a couple of weeks ago, and the contestants all had to actually guess how much in total was spent on their particular apartment, which is what, you know, comes out, or their particular apartment and their portion of all the common areas. I did that on the show with Scotty I think it was on Melbourne Cup Day, actually.
I actually missed that. Were they surprised?
Surprisingly, one of some of them got fairly close to the numbers. They didn't have much of an idea of how to estimate a construction cost, but they come up with their different methodologies, and look, they're quite surprised at how much is spent. I think on the Block always, we've done depreciation work on all of them, and they always spend a lot of money. They're not in the business of are developing, and they actually lose money as developers. But it's actually about the show and the, I guess, the advertising and things that are sold. And look, it gets very good ratings because people like to watch it. So, but as developers, they're not very successful.
Well, actually, a good lesson there, Brad. If someone's looking at doing a renovation or some kind of development, should they be talking to BMT Tax Depreciation before they even start the planning to maximise that that ability?
We can talk to them about the depreciation component, but I think depreciation component's a later thing that comes. When you're doing any type of renovation, or development for that matter, because this is a fairly substantial, obviously, renovation, but development-type project, I've done a lot of renovations on properties and on my properties as an investor, and it's very easy to actually overspend, and it's very... very easy to not make money out of renovating. I mean, TV makes renovating look really easy sometimes, and you know, the block, the numbers are high, but even some renovation and the concept of let's just buy a property and renovate and then we'll make money is not necessarily always as easy as that. You've got to be very careful about what you buy and what you actually spend. And when renovating, I'm a quantity surveyor, and it still comes that you actually find things in the property once you start pulling it apart, but often it costs more money. So you need to make allowances. My renos probably go over my budget some of the time as well.
Yeah. Hey, Brad, great talking to you, mate. Thank you very much. Brad is from BMT Tax Depreciation. A lot to be learned about that, and I'm continually amazed, as Brad is, about how many investors do not do tax depreciation. Anyway, Brad, we'll get the message out there eventually. Good on you, mate. Thanks for taking our call.
Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, Brad Beer from BMT, Tax Depreciation 5 to 8. Very quickly, a question in from Jackie at Sandgate was questioning the, I'll just quickly read through this, how whether or not it was illegal to try to railroad a bidder into paying more money when they were clearly the highest bidder. The situation there was the auctioneer was Damien Cooley, I believe, and Kim and Chris's property, he actually paused the auction, went to them. They were the highest bidder. They had actually gone over the reserve, but he pushed them for and didn't disclose the reserve, obviously. They don't have to. Then pushed them to get more money. I think we've got to understand that, number one, the block is all about theatre. It's done for TV. It is an unreal environment. Having said that, the tactics that Damien used are quite normally used, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think we need to realise that the auctioneer is there for the benefit of the seller, no one else, just the benefit of the seller to get the highest possible price, and that's what they are trained to do, and that's what they do. So that negotiation tactic that Damien used is quite commonly used and is not all that out of the ordinary, Jackie. Anyway, pity we didn't have time for more comments on that. We might pick them up in the next couple of weeks. It's 4 minutes to 8 for BC.
Moreton Bay, one of the most spectacular, pristine natural environments in southeast Queensland today. And nestled within its heart is Calypso Bay, my home and the perfect lifestyle for me and my family. See our latest release with premium north-facing waterfront home sites now selling. And Moreton Bay is only 10 minutes away. Register your interest today. My home, my Calypso Bay, calypsobay.com.au.
Coming up to 3 minutes to 8, and there's a lot to think about and organise when you are a real estate agent. So save yourself time and money and recommend Dead Ant Building and Pest Inspections to your buyers. Using the latest technology, Dead Ant conduct reliable building and pest inspections right across southeast Queensland. And by including you, their inspections are transparent, which helps avoid miscommunication. So when your buyers are looking for building and pest inspectors, always recommend Dead Ant. I'll spell that for you, DEDANT.com.au. DEDANT.com.au.
Downsize your family home and upsize on luxury and lifestyle at Fabric by Point Corp. An impressive new development that's big on stylish features and smart design. Fabric offers the best of Tenerife, plus superb finishes, city views, Tenerife's only rooftop pool, and the City Cat and City Glider on your doorstep. See why the locals never leave. Visit the Fabric sales display, Commercial Road, Tenerife. Phone 1-800-773-779. Fabric by Point Corp. Life well made.
If you're looking for an experienced real estate agent, call Zach Smith from LJ Hooker. He sold over 1,000 properties on Brisbane's north side. That's close to $500 million worth of property in his 25 years in the industry. Now, Zach has had over 650 buyers registered on his database of families, investors, and first home buyers. So if you're looking to sell, He's going to have the buyer there for you on his database. So call Zach today and your comprehensive marketing program will be free of charge, including professional photography, internet and advertising, plus a very competitive commission rate. Call him, Zach Smith. You'll find him at LJ Hooker and his number is 3855 9425. Write that number down for Zach Smith, 3855 9425.
Real estate on 4BC. Make the move to Water's Edge Apartments on the Redcliffe Peninsula. It's absolute waterfront luxury from just $875,000.
And that's where we're going to go. Thanks very much for your company. I'll be back again tomorrow morning as we talk real estate between 7 and 8. Thanks for your help, Pete. News is next. I'll see you tomorrow morning.